Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 75 of Pleb Chain Radio. Today is Friday, the 23rd of August, and it is 2:01 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States at the time of recording. We have a great show ahead of you today. John Gordon of Satoshi Health Advisors is here to tell us how Bitcoin and Nostr can fix healthcare, especially in the U.S., but perhaps the world over as well. Just a reminder that if you are listening to this recording on Apple, Spotify, or as we learned recently, QW, from our numbers, Google Chrome, well, thank you for listening, first of all. But I would.
It's the bot farm just extracting the sats from Fountain.
That's probably what it is. But if you are a bot farm, thank you for listening on Google Chrome. But I would urge you to hit pause on any of those and switch to Fountain app, where you can earn some sats while listening and support the value for value movement. The show is, of course, live on Nostr.ness and Zap.stream, and especially on Nostr.ness, QW. The chat has been getting, there is a live chat that goes along with the show, and it's been getting pretty lively the last few episodes. Another interesting update, QW, is that Nostr, N-O-S-T-U-R, the iOS app, their test flight version, has now integrated Nostr.ness directly into their client. And I believe we have a couple of listeners in the live audience right now who have tuned in via Nostr. So big shout out to Fabian, the creator of Nostr, for that integration.
And Avi, don't you just love that we're constantly testing? Every show, we're always testing stuff. So right now, like Corn DeLorean's testing 1, 2, 3 from the Nostr client, and it's just amazing to be on the edge of technology like we are, the cutting edge.
On occasion, QW, it can get a what is the word I'm looking for? A little daunting, should I say, when you're building an aeroplane as you're flying it. But,
well, luckily we have one parachute, Avi, and I'm wearing it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, another big update, QW, is that the Fountain app, which you and I and a few others have been testing out in beta, the one where they've replaced all the social features of Fountain with the Nostr client, and we had Oscar Murray a few episodes ago give us the lowdown on that. That app is now live on the App Store. So a major, major milestone. An app with over, or with close to 20,000 users, which is what Fountain has, is now a Nostr client, and it's live on the App Store. Then quite a milestone right there.
Yeah, and that episode really aged well. It was nice to have it kind of explain what's under the hood. And if you're listening on Fountain, you don't have the update your app, listen to that show while you're using the new Nostr integration. It's just a neat feature. It's to me, it's taking, just like the episode was called, it's basically making podcasting social. It's something we've never seen before. It's truly remarkable. I think anybody that's going to use it is going to be blown away and grasp Nostr from a different angle.
Indeed, QW. And have you been, Nostriga is wrapping up. Have you been catching any of the action on Zap.stream?
My time zone is the worst. So it starts right around, I think, 11 p.m. And then it wraps up around 6 or 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning. So the only thing I've been able to do is catch whoever the last one was. But it's all on YouTube as far as the downloaded or the you can always go back and watch it. I still need to do that. But I watched some Jack and Odell. There was pretty good banter going on. Jack was wearing the, of course, his his Bart Simpson outfit, the same shirt every time. Shout out Lightning Store, that Satoshi shirt is next level. But yeah, how about you, Avi? You're a little bit further, you're a little closer to them in time.
Well, safe to say, QW, that I've been dying of FOMO. I was in Riga last year for Baltic Honey Badger, almost exactly a year ago, actually. And I know how fun that conference area and then all the side activities can be in Riga. And yeah, but I've been trying to keep up with what's happening. I love this Max Hillebrand note on Master a day or two ago. I'm actually doing this from memory, but he said words to the effect of Nostriga this year feels like what Baltic Honey Badger felt like in 2019. We all felt like we were on the verge of something big. We didn't quite know what it was and how to put that into words, but we all felt it. And he said it feels that way at Nostriga. So I can only imagine.
And when Jack, when I was watching today, he asked, okay, who was at Nostriga? Who was at Nostrasia in Tokyo? And, you know, obviously everyone there. But he said, who's all going to Baltic Honey Badger? And almost everyone raised their hand. It just shows that piggybacking and using these facilities, these conference centers or whatever it may be, is both economical, but it guarantees a base that's there to participate in Noster as well.
For sure, QW. And now, folks, we have a new weekly recurring segment by popular demand, QW.
Yeah, let me introduce it for you. So the last couple of weeks, Avi's been describing a meme. And what we want to do during the week is have you post the memes. Maybe Avi will do a weekly post, a note, kind of like send some memes. And maybe we'll choose one, maybe we'll find a different one. But, you know, describing a meme with the way Avi eloquently storytells in his beautiful humor, I think it's very fitting for Avi to be describing a meme. So we're going to do that every show. And with that said, Avi, please describe a meme.
So today's meme readout is a fairly simple one. It's not a standard format that we see. I actually found this, and unfortunately, I want to attribute this to someone, but I can't remember who I got this from. It is a single frame meme, and there is a picture of a fish in the middle of it. The top caption reads, "Teach a man to fish, and he'll eat for life." And the bottom caption reads, "Give him someone else's fish, and he'll vote for you."
That's beautiful, Avi. And what I like about that is we are bringing memes to people who can't see memes. So it is the Lord's work you're doing, Avi, and we appreciate you for it.
With that said, QW, it is time for our sermon today. Noster Beyond Legacy, what have you got for us?
Well, it was kind of funny because I was using Primal. I've been using it a little bit more lately because of the One Tap Zap. I've kind of bent the knee on trying to go through the hoops of using something else. It's just kind of like a coin purse to me, just have a little bit in that wallet. And one of the metrics that I see, if you look at a profile, is notes and then replies or posts and replies, whatever it may be. But I started to notice there were some accounts that would have, let's just say, 1,500 posts and then, you know, 100 replies. Kind of like, here's what I have to say today. You know, here's my soapbox, or, you know, maybe I'm a thought leader or I'm a think boy, whatever it may be. But, you know, what I noticed is the plebs that I really get involved with, the ones that have had a lot of success in Noster, especially from the beginning, they have much more replies. So when you start looking at that note to reply, you start to get a ratio. Is that right, Avi?
You do start to get a ratio. And I want to talk a little bit about that ratio, QW. Because it's interesting. You and I were, and a few of us were, talking about how best to characterize this, how best to interpret that ratio, right? So if you divide the number of replies on someone's profile by the number of notes, original notes that they have. And it depends on the type of account, obviously, right? You could have a broadcast only account that only does
Blockchain radio, Avi.
Like blockchain radio.
Zero replies.
We have zero replies and only notes where we just post the show. But if you look at the general, the middle part of the bell curve, right, of plebs, I think there are interesting ways of interpreting this, right? So if you say a ratio of less than one, what is a ratio of less than one? So that means they have just about more original notes than replies. That could mean that that account is a wannabe influencer, right? They just post broadcasting these think boy type comments or whatever it might be, and not particularly engaging with the replies. Now, on the other hand, a ratio of, let's say, I don't know what a good number would be, but let's say more than six or seven, right? Meaning they have six or seven times the number of replies than notes. That could mean that that could be indicative of simp behavior, right? Riding on the coattails of someone else's original posts and not really coming up with too much original content of their own. So maybe, just maybe, there is a sweet spot in the replies to notes ratio, something like the 1 to 5 range. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and to the really the when I was doing my Noster fundamental presentation at my local Bitcoin meetup, I asked people, hey, you know, who's on Noster? And then I would talk to them after the fact or before, and I'd be like, what's your profile? Let me help you out and whatnot. And I would look at it and it'd be like, you know, 16 notes and no replies or two replies. Like, the way Noster works is you need to be engaging. You need to be building in that that community. And, you know, reciprocation it really sets us apart. I really think that's the big aspect of Noster is engagement and getting those replies, and not to a simp level. You know, clearly you want to be your own person. You want to have your own thoughts. You want to, you know, sometimes you have some profound things you feel like you want to share, and that's great. But you know, what I don't like to see and where I think people fail is they have a tendency to replicate. So they'll go from X and they'll just go right back to, and then they join to Noster and they think it's just an X replacement, which, you know, maybe that client is that you're on, but you don't have to act like it's X. You don't have to be the simp. You don't have to be the thought boy, whatever it may be. You know, that engagement is the key. You know, when I look at Riga, and just like you were saying, I feel like there's a tide shifting. I feel like we're starting to see Bitcoin Twitter kind of implode as more and more people come to Noster. But when you come to Noster, know that you're in a new frontier. Know that, you know, you can change things and you know, your voice matters. Not only that, we're on the cutting edge. So we have so many things to test out. We have so many things to try and recreate ourselves, not in that legacy mindset that I feel like that replication is kind of a trap. You know, so and then we have Zaps. Zaps are a gift. You know, if you're going to go come to Noster and all you're going to do is, you know, maybe engagement farm and like a couple things, you know, you're missing out on the full potential of Noster. Zaps are very much a reciprocation and engagement mechanism that you should be using. You know, and with that said, you know, it's much bigger. Noster is much bigger. It's an entire ecosystem. So, you know, we all focus on the notes. That's our very first thing because we're in that legacy mindset. But I think there's something that you and I, Avi, are going to try in the next week. And, you know, I'd like to say we're going on a journey, Avi. what does that journey entail?
What does that journey entail? It's almost like a fast KW. When we were talking about it and you had the idea, it sounded to me like a sensory deprivation or a fast, just to see what the full Noster experience can be. But that journey is no kind one notes from a social client, meaning from a Twitter clone type client. Did we agree on a week, QW, or are we going to keep doing this for a while?
Oh, I just think 1 week. That way we can kind of recap. And maybe this will be our new identity, Avi. Maybe we just won't be on Domus and Noster and Amethyst and Primal. I highly doubt that. But I think a week would suffice, especially with the amount of the other stuff that's around.
So the idea is, this is your idea, QW, and I think it's a good one, is no kind one notes from a Domus, Primal, Amethyst, that type of client for a week. So QW and I, for the following week, and we'll there are a couple of exceptions that we'll talk about in a second, but for the period of a week, we're only going to interact with Nostr using other stuff clients. Like
Nostr without notes, Avi. I'd like to think of it like the Aussies say, we're going on a walkabout. But you know, it's about encouraging everyone. I highly recommend people try this as well. You know, maybe everybody wants to do a week with us, where it's the other stuff challenge, something where, you know, maybe I'll dance around, and you know, honestly, what gave me the idea, and we've been in this test flight for a couple weeks now, was Fountain. Being able to use Fountain and still interacting with Domus and Primal, whatever it may be, we were able to use the other stuff but still interact with the notes. So really, it's highlighting the ecosystem, the cohesion, the decentralized cohesion, I want to call it. But being able to dance around the protocol through the ecosystem and understanding that it's much more. So I my grandma's birthday, I believe, is today. God rest her soul. I'm gonna be on Zap.cooking, I think, next Wednesday, cooking up something. I'll put something on there. But really, the idea, you know, I'll be listening on Wave. Like Toonster has another live event coming from Nashville this upcoming Monday. I think it's the last one of this month, and I they might be done after that. But it's Phantom Power Media. I'm gonna be on Toonster. All these different mechanisms, the other stuff that I'd really like to try out and dedicate myself to. What's your journey going to look like, Avi?
Something along those lines, QW. I might try some of the long form clients like Yakihone or Habla.news. Maybe Satellite Earth. I haven't tried a lot of these clients. I've been reading about them. So it'll be nice to take a break from the Twitter clones and explore some of these other ones, certainly Fountain and Wavelake, of course, which I use already. But I suspect I'll be trying out a lot of new ones out there, maybe finding some that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, it's important to know that we can actually conversate through these apps too, or clients. It's something where you can, you know, you might post a long form, but you can still comment back via those clients. So you're still participating in the Nostr notes side of things, only from the other stuff.
That's right, QW. Now, there are going to be a couple of exceptions to this. Right after the show, or once the show is recorded and up on Fountain, we will post the show, one of us will. And then this segment, talking about the challenge, will be clipped, maybe a couple of other clips. Those will come out sometime today. And then there's one more, which will be, I will post announcing the next show at some point, middle of next week. But outside of those three or four exceptions, it is a full on fast on Kind One Notes.
I'm excited. And we'll break down kind of what we learned and how we felt about it and all those, different bridges we crossed, in that other stuff journey. So stay tuned. And honestly, anybody listening, try it out.
Indeed. All right, QW. I think it is time to bring on our guest, John Gordon from Satoshi Health Advisors. Welcome to Blockchain Radio, sir.
Thanks so much for having me on. Excited to be here. Love your guys' show. And yeah, it's fun to play around with these new tools and Nostr Ness. It's good to see people hanging out.
Yeah, for sure, John. So we've got to start with a burning question for you. Is the U.S. healthcare industry the most fiat of all industries in existence?
Yes, I would argue that fiat healthcare is the most fiat of all industries, and taking up almost 18% of GDP, $4.5 trillion a year in spend, with a quarter of that being administrative and half of that is waste. So if we think about fiat being the entry of middlemen, rent extraction, rent seeking from participants in the industry, I think healthcare, you know, certainly takes the cake on that one.
I thought as much, John. For those who don't know, I've spent a significant portion of my career in the healthcare technology industry, and I'm still there. And this is the life I live. So yes, I couldn't agree more, John. So let's start with your pleb story, with your backstory, John. How did you get into Satoshi Health Advisors? What did that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Spent several years, about 7-8 years or so, really working deep in the fiat healthcare industry in a variety of different roles that were interesting and challenging, but at the same time, continued to open my eyes to new opportunities once I started learning about Bitcoin, really, in 2020, 2021 cycle. But started doing strategy consulting with health systems, helping them tackle their big challenges, and really saw that underlying fiat centralization, lots of M&A activity, and bigger health systems that were finding it harder and harder to take care of their local population and more sick population that was costing them more and more, especially in those higher acuity settings like the hospital. Shifted to the payer space, worked in insurance, specifically Medicaid for a bit. So the government plan for low-income individuals, which has now ballooned to over 85 million, oftentimes approaching 100 million individuals on Medicaid, and wanted to do something more entrepreneurial, got in the medical supply space. I was working on a product. We were putting RFID chips in sponges used during surgery to prevent retained objects in the operating room. So, try to stay off the operating table as much as you can. Happens a few thousand times a year. And was doing a master's in health economics and policy, and got outside the U.S. bubble and really studying and understanding how healthcare is paid for, impacts delivery, impacts outcomes, and ultimately who's taking responsibility or holding that risk or holding the bag. And that program was over. Then in 2020, COVID hit. We couldn't sell new products in the hospital. And that's when I started going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and just understanding all the ways that I thought Bitcoin could fix healthcare, and went to El Salvador actually at the end of 2021, November, just kind of on my own accord. We were remote. The company was calling people back at the office, and I was like, don't think I'm going to come back. I'm going to explore this Bitcoin world, and was just, fell in love with the country, with Bitcoin, the people that I was meeting. My wife and I are nomadic, and funny enough, we were traveling then. When everyone said, don't travel, we said, no, we're going to go to a wedding in South Africa. Ended up in Bali for a couple months, and we had to quarantine for a week in Jakarta in a hotel room. And while holed up in that hotel room is really when the birth and a lot of the thoughts around Satoshi Health Advisors came to be. Heard about this opportunity for individuals who would be crowdfunding each other's bills rather than being formal health insurance, but just with aligned incentives and shopping around for the best prices, finding the best quality of care. And so that's what led us to Austin, and working with Crowd Health was a great experience, and really leaning into the Bitcoin community, the health community, beef, and showing this intersection and what could be possible with Bitcoin, with healthcare on a Bitcoin standard. And I helped Crowd Health last year integrate and working on building on the Breeze SDK to enable Lightning payments for individuals to crowdfund each other's bills to directly pay doctors. And so I said to myself, hey, where are those doctors out there that are actually accepting Bitcoin? And then for those that are running business models like direct primary care or like surgery centers that fairly post their prices and are cutting out the middleman, going direct to consumer, cutting out insurance, you know, helping them understand Bitcoin. And so that's really my goal and what led me to founding Satoshi Health Advisors, is helping healthcare providers and businesses integrate a Bitcoin strategy and understanding Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, how to tap into it, how to accept payments, and saving in their treasury, and ultimately getting that stack so that they can go out and run their business. You're talking about, you know, teaching someone to fish early on with your meme, Avi, you know, having them run and have Bitcoin seamlessly integrated into their business, finding those individuals who want to participate in really a value for value healthcare interaction between restoring that physician and patient relationship that's been lost with all the middlemen.
Yeah. And John, we'll get into some of the more detail around the mechanics of crowd health, but I think it's worth pointing out that a lot of our conversation is going to be centered around the ills in the US healthcare market, right? So a lot of the non-American listeners might be in disbelief at how broken the system is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you said nomadic lifestyle, we've had a couple, right, Avi? We've had, two or three shows where our guests were nomads. Talk a little bit about that, John.
Yeah. So my wife and I, we'd been in Chicago, you know, COVID hit. We're like, yeah, we don't really want to be here locked up right now, and just got in the car and hopped out west and spent a few months out west. And then we got married and said, let's, you know, fully leave. We left for about 7 or 8 months. Then that winter going into 2021. And so we brought our tent and camp out a bit, you know, Airbnb here and there. Heard your episode with AirBTC. Would love to start using AirBTC as well now to really find awesome places to stay. So when you're not, we didn't have a home, no rent, no mortgage, you know, we can really explore and travel. And so we lived that way for about a year and a half or so, 2 years before getting to Austin. And now we were picking up again and going nomadic with our 9-month-old daughter. So are traveling again, and we love seeing the world and connecting with others. So, you know, I think Bitcoin and Oster, the tools are really being built around it to live that lifestyle and not be necessarily tied down in one place and build these meaningful connections in different cities. So my wife has her own business. She can be flexible. And now, you know, for me, especially running my own business, working on some different projects, we just need an internet connection.
Did you ask her to marry her in the van?
No, I asked her to marry me on the beach, but along Lake Michigan for Midwesterners.
So, and that was, so you asked her to marry you asked her to marry you after, like during the nomadic lifestyle or just after?
Before, but we'd already traveled a bit together, and she'd spent a lot of time traveling out east and in Europe as well. So we'd already kind of experienced that together. And then COVID was sort of the perfect storm, as everybody here knows, of, you know, and we'd had an apartment in Chicago and did not want to stay there throughout that time period. So yeah. Getting out, having space, even being able to run, you know, along the beach in California, as much as they were still doing lockdowns, you could still have some fresh air and decent weather.
Yeah, it's got to be a trying and beautiful experience, being in a van for, you know, living in a van, living out of one, I suppose. But it's that's beautiful, man.
Thank you.
So talking about the healthcare landscape in the U.S., just broadly, I mean, for a layman like myself, you know, what, explain it in layman terms, the main problems plaguing the industry. Both from a cost outcome, cost and outcome standpoint. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. It may look very complicated, but really it breaks down to, you know, who's paying for care, who's receiving care, and who's delivering care. And generally, you have this trilateral arrangement with risk in the middle, right? Health and financial risk. And whether it's the government paying for healthcare via programs like Medicare for 65 plus or Medicaid for low income, or it's commercial plans. So the employer paying via these big health insurance companies, that accounts for about half of the country's insurance coverage. And then you do have about 8% of the country that's uninsured. So they're deciding not to get insurance. You have a few percent on the military plan and initiated providers to set the prices of care. But those prices are obfuscated or really not transparent for the individual consumer or the patient. And at the end of the day, the big insurance and their bottom line. And there is a law stipulated in Obamacare, which came into place in the late 2010, that said that insurance companies can only make a 15% profit. So for every $100 in premiums that their individuals pay them, they have to spend 85% on medical care. And so now the only way for them to make more money is for prices and premiums to go up. But they're supposed to be your agent as an individual. You think, oh, I have insurance. They're, you know, negotiating for me. They have my best interest at heart. It's not really how it plays out in practice. And so in practice, healthcare prices have risen more than any other industry, more than 250% in the last couple decades increase. And the U.S. is spending over $13,000 per year per person, which is 2 to 3 times the average of other OECD or developed countries, and having worse outcomes. Life expectancy dropped even 2 years during since COVID. 88% of Americans metabolically unhealthy, 6 in 10 have a chronic condition. So it's really this cycle and ultimately sick care system where the way that hospitals are paid is based on heads in beds. It's a fee for service. The more services they provide, the more they're going to get paid. And they don't really understand their costs of production either, which is a big problem. So you don't really have fair pricing mechanisms. You have a lot of sort of shady backroom deals, setting prices, and ultimately the individual is paying for it in the form of, you know, an individual plan from an employer. You're going to be paying $8,000 a year just for your premiums. And then usually on $3,000 or $4,000 deductible. What the fancy word deductible means is just you have to pay $3,000 before the insurance company even pays a dime. And then you're also going to have co-pays or other user charges associated with specific visits that you take to the doctor. You're going to have networks of doctors you can or can't go to, or you could still go to them if they're out of network, but you're going to pay a lot more. And so you could end up unconscious in the ER and your anesthesiologist is out of network and you're stuck with that bill. You're stuck with that price because you've already entered into that contract with the insurance company. And that's what the insurance company had negotiated with the hospital. So when you ditch all this madness and you become uninsured, it's actually incredibly freeing. So we've been uninsured now for 2+ years. And it's amazing because you can go anywhere you want for care. And we're getting a fair price for healthcare. And so that's, and it's still a lot, but just a brief overview. And then, of course, you've got the whole pharmaceutical industry, which only accounts for, interestingly enough, 10% of that $4.5 trillion in spend. So still not small, you know, $400 billion a year. And that aspect of the industry is also centralized through what's called pharmacy benefits managers, PBMs, that they, the big insurance companies basically bought the PBMs and are setting prices for drugs against themselves. For several years, Medicare also couldn't even negotiate prices on drugs. So the big pharma companies could just set basically whatever price they wanted in the US and the government would pay for it. And then those same drugs in other countries cost significantly less. So you've ended up with in a sense that the US system is just paying and lining the pockets of a lot of these big, you know, global healthcare businesses. And a lot of just so much middlemen, so much waste, and ultimately declining health of the population, which is the sad part.
You know, John, there's a lot to unpack there. And obviously these are things, I work at a large health tech company that's affiliated both with health systems and with insurance companies. So I'm painfully familiar with a lot of what you just said, but I think it'll be helpful for our listeners, So you talked about the insurance company's business model, right? What do? They charge premiums. So let's say it's $100 premium. And now that by statute, right, by regulation, they have to, they can only keep a certain percentage of that as profit. The rest of that is, so the percentage that it's called, it's referred to as the medical loss ratio. The rest of it has to be paid out in claims. It seems fairly straightforward, right? And claims here are, if you as a patient go to a provider, to a healthcare provider, they provide a service, right? At that point, the healthcare provider, the hospital or clinic or whatever, right, they have to write up, fill out a form, and send that to the insurance company, and the insurance company, you know, quote unquote, adjudicates that form, right? They look at what the services that were rendered and decide if those were acceptable, and they can choose to pay whatever amount. That I mean, typically it should be stipulated by the contract the insurance company has with the hospital, but the insurance company has a way of playing games. Now, all of that said, so that's a claim, right? That's the amount of money an insurance company has to pay. That, and they have, you know, there's a minimum amount, there's only a certain X amount of profit that they're allowed to make by statute. Now, that's the easy way of looking at it. Obviously, the games that insurance companies play is they take the $100 in premium from the patients, they park that in short-term treasuries, and then they stall on paying the claims while they're collecting the yield on the treasuries, right? So that's a sort of a sly roundabout way in which they make income. So it just adds even more to the brokenness of the system, because the insurance company's incentive now is not to pay the hospital.
Exactly. And those claims then don't get paid for an average 2 to 3 months to the provider, to the doctor, to the hospital or health system. So now, yeah, imagine running a business, and when you have a lot of fixed costs and relatively low margins, and the money for the services that you're providing isn't even going to come in for months, if ever, because now the insurance company can deny your claim, or we say, hey, you need to get authorization before you go get that service. And claims are denied even almost 20% of the time on average. If it's not formatted in the right way, or if it wasn't a service that the health insurance allowed for with their own, you know, doctors on staff saying what should or shouldn't happen. So yeah, throughout these interactions, you know, the individual is thrown to the wayside, not really considered at all. And it's just a constant back and forth and headache and incredible difficulty in even interacting with this crazy system. And then you end up with a situation where medical debt just keeps piling up, because now once that claim then finally gets paid, some of it might get paid by the insurance, but then a lot of the balance will also go now to the individual. And around 1 in 3 Americans has medical debt. And there's hundreds of thousands of families going bankrupt every year due to medical bills when most of them even have health insurance. But when you're paying as a family, you know, $24,000 a year is coming out of your paycheck as premiums, you know, we don't even realize that all that loss potential too, in terms of that employer relationship. So yeah, there's so many aspects here to unpack, and that claims process itself, and how long it takes for payments to settle. Well, immediately, I think everyone here is thinking, what about Bitcoin? How about the Lightning Network? Immediate settlement at the speed of light. I mean, that's completely transformational for a lot of these businesses that typically have a really long time to wait before they even get their cash.
Yeah, one other absurdly fiat, I mean, there's several absurdly fiat things about all of this, right? But one other one is, if you think about just most other industries, most other sort of transactions, right? You go to a store to buy an apple, you go to the barber to get a haircut and a shave, right? You know the price as a customer. The provider of that service or that good tells you the price. It's right there. With healthcare, let's say you go in for an x-ray to a radiologist, they say, oh yeah, you have a $10 copay or whatever, $25 copay. And then you think, okay, that's it, I'm out. And then they submit the claim to the radiologist, then performs the x-ray, then submits the claim. And then the insurance company does its own shenanigans. And then 6 months later, you get a bill for $100. even though you thought the price was 25 up front. So there is no price transparency because of this absurd setup.
Yeah, no price transparency and an incredible amount of price differentiation depending on who the consumer is. So for example, commercial payers, if you're part of an insurance plan through your employer, they're paying 250% more than the government is paying for the exact same service. So by paying into this big premium system, these higher prices are baked in. And so the providers now, if you ditch that aspect of pre-negotiating prices at the insurance level and say, hey, what's your fair price for the service? You'll find that usually it's at least 50% off that sticker price or that higher level insurance price. Maybe it's a little bit more than what the government pays because the government's paying less and less every year. And maybe you don't have access to certain providers at certain quality levels at that price. But now all of a sudden you're getting significant savings just by opting out and asking that doctor directly, you know, how much will it cost for me to be a member and have access to you in concierge medicine or direct primary care for the surgery? And maybe it's, you know, $80 a month to have access to this doctor when you thought through your insurance, oh, wow, I get one visit a year and I get 7 minutes with him and I'm paying $8,000. This is what I'm getting. So yeah, there's no transparency. And then even the way the hospitals bill their prices with charge masters are completely nonsensical prices that they then give a percent off to insurance. It's a game all the way down the road and just a massive, massive fiat game.
And it's a game that is spiraling deeper into the abyss because you're talking about $4.5 trillion annually, right? And this is the money spent on healthcare procedures across the country between the insurance companies, Medicare, out-of-pocket costs, all of that. That number is increasing at between 5% and 10% a year, depending on the year. And on top of it, healthcare outcomes are decreasing, right? Meaning that they're getting worse. Patients are getting sicker. People are getting sicker. Populations getting unhealthier. And they're less and less satisfied with the quality of care they're getting. It is quite remarkable how as things get more and more convoluted, costs keep going up and then outcomes continue declining.
Yeah, 100%. And there's a lot of buzzwords and, you know, actions people are trying to take in the industry, whether it's value-based care or, you know, population health. And, you know, ultimately value is really your quality divided by your cost. And yeah, the quality is going down and the cost is going up and the value across the board and what you're getting as a consumer in that system just continues to decrease. And of course, there's so many important inputs to our health that are outside of this Western medical healthcare system, right? And in terms of what we're eating, how we're moving our bodies throughout the day, how much sunlight are we getting, and our lifestyle and our environment and all these toxins in the environment as well. That are leading to just an ever-increasing prevalence of cancers, of comorbidities, diabetes, COPD, heart disease, you know, all these mental health issues. It really goes across the board. And, you know, the solutions from the traditional fiat system thrown at it is just, you know, more and more drugs or more and more healthcare in that traditional sense, and they'll feed off that sickness versus, hey, if I'm actually understanding my body and taking responsibility personally for my health and my life and my lifestyle, you know, I can make a lot of changes that don't involve me even going to the doctor, or maybe I found a doctor that I really align with and is more of a consultant kind of in my health. But staying out of the hospital, staying out of, you know, having that type of traditional care, all of a sudden your costs go way down, right? And you're able to spend that value instead of our average American now who's spending more money on health insurance than food. I mean, we just have it completely backwards right now.
And crowd health was an attempt to address at least some of those issues, right, John? So let's talk a little bit about the idea behind crowd health, what the model looked like, and how is it really that different from an insurance company?
Yeah, so it is a lot different from an insurance company and even a health share that might be a more religious-based group that we have in the U.S. as well. So it's a crowdfunding model where people are voluntarily contributing to each other's bills. And anything over $500 goes to the crowd for crowdfunding. And you can say yes or no each time. But you get a generosity score based on your track record of giving. So you can kind of see, hey, has this person been, you know, a good community member or not? And so now to be a member, it's $50 a month that goes to Crowd Health Service, and then up to $135 a month to crowdfund other people's bills. And it actually does change based on the utilization in the community. And for a while, Crowd Health was saving in Bitcoin. And because what they found was that actually for every, $100 being saved, only about $35 was being spent on medical care. So that's a pretty significant savings and, big difference from that MLR. But then on the fiat side of things, that was just money sort of sitting there for people to spend in the future for others. So that money went back to individuals. And now it's really only crowdfunding in real time each month for what bills are being needed and going over towards, being able to spend in Bitcoin. And so when I was going to businesses, even more B2B2C, to say, hey, this is going to be an alternative to, you spending, employers are spending about 85% of that premium, and the individual is only paying 15-20% of their premium. You could save a few thousand dollars a year for each person that opts out. You can give them a health stipend of $300 a month instead of paying $500, premium, saving money. But at the end of the day, it's the individual's decision. And when the employee doesn't bear the brunt of the cost, they're, less likely to opt out. So it's really, it's found to be very much a direct to consumer product. There's over around 6,000 or 7,000 members now. When I joined the team, there's around 1,500 members. So there's been some good growth. And, I think plugging into this ecosystem more broadly of trying to find doctors who will provide fair prices, Crowd Health will help you negotiate bills. You can get access to telemedicine as well, which is really helpful from a primary or urgent care or even talk therapy perspective. And just being in a group of people that want to take care of their health and support each other in that way, like humans have been doing for thousands of years. We help each other when someone gets sick or, that 1% event happens. You have that support versus being fully uninsured, but you have, that community to really stay behind you, where if something bigger does happen, you're not stuck with that massive bill. And you'll find even for bigger surgeries, it's not going to be 20, 30, 40 grand that your insurance would pay. It's only going to be 5, 6, or 7 grand, right? And then all of a sudden, spread out over that many people, it's very realistic. And so they can also select for individuals, right? Insurance is not allowed to kind of discriminate on anything. That's part of a Affordable Care Act too, with pre-existing conditions. So you can't be over 260 pounds. You can't be a smoker. And then if you have a pre-existing condition, you can't get crowdfunding for that condition in the first 2 years. And then you can get up to $25,000 a year for that condition. So this kind of gets at some of the gaming that goes on in the fiat system, where people might already have an issue and kind of bring it over. And all of a sudden, that's a huge cost that everybody else in the insurance, in that pool has to help fund. So there's no pooling of funds. That's a big differentiator from insurance. And it really is a group of, I'd say, sovereign individuals, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of young families, a lot of nomads, because even when you're traveling too, you're not going to the same place. And you'll realize, like, we were in Costa Rica once and we needed some healthcare, and it was $100 for like an hour and a half of a doctor's time. And that wouldn't even hit the crowdfunding threshold. You realize, especially when you're traveling too, healthcare as any other service, when subjected to the free market, you're going to get a fair price. And as of now in the US, it's a very heavily regulated market, and we have a huge shortage of doctors, and there's a lot of regulation around licensure and challenges and burnout, even really from the doctor perspective too. That's a huge issue in healthcare. And so if we really want to build up and be able to have that access to these services, I think more and more doctors moving on to a Bitcoin standard, or at least understanding Bitcoin, starting to accept Bitcoin, and realize that that can help strengthen the independence of their business and resist a lot of these centralizing fiat forces that we've experienced in the current system.
So, John, was that what made you? So that was Crowd Health, and then you moved to your, you created your own company, right? Satoshi Health Advisors. What are some of the things you're focused on over there?
Yeah, so I'm really focused on helping businesses integrate a Bitcoin strategy. So I've mostly been focusing on healthcare businesses, given my background, you know, in healthcare. But I've also helped an e-bike shop, helping an architect, really anyone that wants to understand Bitcoin and Lightning, integrate payments and treasury solutions, maybe even Bitcoin rewards, and then going out and marketing to that Bitcoin community that we know continues to grow and have a lot of loyalty for finding those value for value connections. So working primarily with direct primary care doctors. So this model of care that I'm sure you're familiar with, where doctors have a monthly fee and say it's at $80, $100 a month. And now you can text, call your doctor, get unlimited visits, have someone that really gets to know you and can spend time with you. That's a great area for Bitcoin adoption. Who I've worked with, dentists as well, individuals or businesses that are boxed out of the traditional health insurance model and have a lot of direct payments from customers already. Therapists, talking to, you know, potentially, I think getting into surgery centers would be really interesting as well. You mentioned imaging centers. Because anyone that's providing a fair value, transparent price for their healthcare is a good candidate to start, I believe, with Bitcoin integration. Because as we were talking about how complicated and convoluted this insurance system is, and as you know from the inside, they're going to be the last ones to adopt, you know, Bitcoin and even Noster. Talk about that a bit too, you know, in healthcare. So that's really been my focus with Satoshi Health Advisors, is a lot of that consulting and helping to plug into this network and really growing in strong community of Bitcoiners across cities and even getting access around the world to doctors that otherwise you wouldn't have found or really been able to interact with before.
Is there any success stories that you want to share? Maybe one member that came back and shared their story and how much that you Crowd Health actually affected their life?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Crowd Health was awesome for even for us personally, and there's a lot of pregnancies is a big one. So, you know, we had
I have an 18-month-old. You were talking about your 9-month-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking. So like even our own story of, you know, we went
liability to escalation there.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to a birthing center. So outside the hospital, my wife was amazing and, you know, 40 hours of labor, and we didn't have to deal with insurance. We even got a discount directly from the birthing center because we were paying, you know, in cash, and then going to Crowd Health and getting crowdfunding for the baby for, it was $1,500 to have a baby. And so, you know, you can, there's three health events. Yeah. Prenatal care, delivery, and postpartum. Yeah. So that, you know, and getting, so from even now, just a consumer standpoint, you know, that's a huge success, I think, and win for us. Staying out of the hospital, avoiding some very potential negative outcomes that come. And as I was studying the birthing process and just, and having seen it firsthand in a Medicaid plan where there's a ton of fraud, waste, and abuse going on, particularly for C-sections, you know, in 1971, our C-section rate in this country was less than 5%. Now it's in the mid 30s, 35% in C-sections.
Liability, right? It was just like,
speed. Yeah. More and more interventions, right? So whether it's an induction or getting Pitocin and of course the epidural, there's just a lot of things that can go wrong when you start to move away from trusting the body to know and midwives and people mm-hmm. that have been around birth and humans that have been birthing for, you know, thousands, millions of years. And going into this medicalized system that if really, if you think about it in the scheme of time is very brief and very short. And so being able to have that autonomy to choose where to go, you know, right now there's only about 150 freestanding birthing centers in the whole country. Only about 1% are doing home births. So you tend to see, and the Crowd Health number was around 40%, even of home births and birthing centers. So you see people that are realizing that there are risks involved with that liability in the traditional system, and then knowing that, hey, we'd be able to get the other, you know, $6,000-$7,000 that we needed crowdfunded for those bills. And helping doctors then providers, you know, I would have loved to pay that birthing center in Bitcoin, right? And like, so that's really would be my target now, or at least the kind of businesses I'm trying to help in understanding Bitcoin and realizing, hey, there's a lot of alignment from a value perspective in what we're seeking really as Bitcoiners, and being able to accept payment in Bitcoin directly from members crowdfunding each other's bills over Lightning. I mean, that's really super innovative, and hopefully we'll get rolled out pretty soon.
Hey, John, just one comment I have to make before we move on, QW. Another staggering WTF happened in 1971. John just casually dropped right there.
Exactly.
And I do want to say, Avi did not plan for the, I counted, I think, two ambulances that went by his apartment there in New York. So we didn't plan on that for the show.
Yeah.
It is New York City.
So how did you get started in Noster? I think you started in February of 23, if I remember correctly from your profile.
Yeah. You know, just being in the Austin Bitcoin community, we're fortunate to have some amazing builders who are very early on to Noster. So I think we had someone speaking at one of our Austin Bitcoin Club meetups and got signed up for Noster, yeah, early on in 2023. I think even that was before some of the updates, even maybe was it NIPO 5. And I think I even signed up earlier and then recreated an account. Can't exactly remember the early days, but yeah, early into Noster, seeing using Domus, seeing the potential there, also really lit me up in knowing how broken healthcare data is, and how our data is very centralized, very sensitive information is hacked constantly, sold off to the highest bidder. And so, you know, being around Bitcoiners and Noster, playing around with it, it's just been super fun, and seeing the potential that all these different clients, you know, you bring your identity, you bring your keys across, you can have different user experiences with Noster. I think that communication level, you know, can really play in to healthcare as well. And, you know, haven't also had some FOMO of Nostriga and wasn't able to make it to Costa Rica last year for the Noster conference, but definitely want to, you know, continue leaning in into Noster and how interoperable the two protocols are, having payments naturally built in. You know, I think there's just so much potential with Noster. And while our current clients now, you know, are starting with, you know, almost Twitter clones in a way, or long form writing, or here we are podcasting or having a conversation, which is amazing. You know, there's so many more use cases, I think, that we can't even imagine yet that Noster will enable to better our lives, and being able to bring our identity and our and not have to fill out a million forms everywhere we go, which is still currently the status quo, you know, particularly in the healthcare industry.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in the emergency room and you have to do 15 minutes of paperwork while your wife's bleeding out. That was my experience. You mentioned the Noster with the healthcare. I think the first time I heard that was from Vitor. Are you familiar with Vitor? Have from Amethyst.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him about that?
Yeah. We've chatted a bit. And yeah, Vitor actually has a healthcare background too. So,
I thought that was super unique. And then we have our good friend Doc, who's in the healthcare too. There's a lot of Doc plebs out there. That's interesting. I think there was a Noster transmitting optometry, your eye score or whatnot, whatever that would be, your prescription for your eyeglasses. I think I heard that as well. We're slowly invading the healthcare space, as we should.
Yeah, and you know, John, you and I obviously we've been talking about Noster and healthcare at a high level to see you know, what the possibilities are. Maybe that's a topic for another day. But more broadly, though, right, given the properties of the NOS protocol, how do you think that plays into some of the problems we were talking about a little while earlier?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and yeah, Avi, you know, we met at the Bitcoin conference, I believe last year in Miami, and even just connecting with someone else like yourself who has all this healthcare experience and also, you know, understanding Noster and Bitcoin and the potential there has been really inspiring and helpful for me personally, you know, in thinking about these things. And I think what Noster really tackles and can help address is, you know, having that, first of all, individual ownership, you know, patient, individual, us being the primary owner of that healthcare data and not having it being owned by the electronic medical record or the hospital or Caspian behind the scenes that owns, you know, 150 million people's records. You know, it's just such a honeypot for, and as we saw earlier this year with United Healthcare getting hacked, Change Healthcare, and that impact that it has even at the end of the day for tens of billions of dollars of claims not being paid to doctors. And the other thing, you know, so putting the individual ownership both for the patient and the doctor, I think giving doctors that autonomy and that freedom to really own themselves too, as more and more doctors continue to get bought up or working with health systems or even getting bought up by private equity. Being able to maintain your independence and then have that portability. So health data portability across regions, across providers, and selective data disclosure of, you know, how I can now selectively disclose that information that I want, maybe some information, you know, and health is really social in a lot of ways. Maybe I do want to just, you know, post this on my feed and this is something I'm working on or would love to get input from the community. Or I only want to share this with my doctor or I only want to share this with my brother or my family or my caretaker. There's so many use cases there, or I don't want to share it at all. And that's the freedom and flexibility I think that Noster protocol can bring, where individuals at the end of the day have that public private key and we can have, you know, uses across the board. So I think it's, yeah, still very, very early days, you know, in considering some of these things, but from what I've seen in my work in connecting with healthcare providers directly, I'll mention Noster, and you know, we're looking at different electronic medical record systems. A lot of these tools are very clunky, do not work very well, and they're very open to change. And so, having doctors that understand Bitcoin and Noster, even as a plus, you know, I think we can create a really interesting ecosystem and have you know, give have that sovereignty for the community of people that care about their health. And look, at the end of the day, we're all human. We're all going to have our biological needs coming up, whether now or into the future. But being able to live, you know, and have a more lower time preference and know that if something happens, or if you have a specific need for you or your child or anyone, you know, you know where to go and even can trust, right? Because there's always going to be trust element in there. And doctors getting into the field for the right reasons have felt a lot of stress and burnout with the current system where they only have 5 minutes to see their patient and they have to get through 20 patients a day. It's just exhausting and it's not sustainable. So if we want to have a system that is really based on freedom, on individual sovereignty, personal responsibility, I think that's healthcare integrated and really built on Bitcoin and Noster.
And I think to get some of these early adopters on using tools like Bitcoin and Noster, John, I think the challenge is going to be finding people with a, how do I say it, with a generous view towards user experience, who are willing to wait for the user experience to develop over time, right? And that typically is Bitcoiners or Nostriches, right? So I think that is going to be the challenge, to try out some of these experiments and how Noster and Bitcoin can fix some of the challenges in healthcare. We'll have to find people who are used to having a good user experience, right? Or things that just work out of the box. I mean, they work because they're centralized and they're walled gardens and it's easy to do. But they don't, I mean, a doctor off the street is not going to understand that. when you show them Nostr and say, look, it's truly decentralized. And, you know, it's going to take a while. There are all these clients and the user experience is evolving. So have you found that to be a challenge?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think trying to make it not so many steps for a doctor to accept Bitcoin payments and make that user experience, you know, they say, hey, am I even going to have people in my town or in my area, you know, willing to pay in Bitcoin? The answer may be, you know, no to lower to start, and then we continue to grow and grow. Ultra personal healthcare is a DPC clinic that I helped Veronica down in Austin, and Austin has a dense area of Bitcoiners, and she was able to pick up some more, you know, Bitcoin clients. And I think Zaprite is an amazing tool, you know, to help integrate where for now, you know, you can do invoices. Now you can do recurring invoices. You make Bitcoin and Lightning alongside fiat payments as well. So even if someone isn't paying in Bitcoin today, they're seeing that it's an option. And I think that type of education, even subliminal, you know, subconscious messaging to patients sends a message. And Dr. Wilson, who I worked with in Michigan, at Wilson & Wilson Dentistry, everyone that's going to pay gets that payment link. They get the option, credit card, Bitcoin, and Lightning. And even if, you know, he's not seeing a ton of Bitcoin payments yet, that could potentially grow over time. And that sends out a signal to, you know, other Bitcoiners in Michigan. Hey, if you're looking for a dentist, hey, you should probably go to Dr. Wilson. And because he's already down that path, right? And understanding that value for value relationship. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an uphill battle, and getting more providers to see the benefit of even starting with a treasury strategy, saving some in Bitcoin. You know, these are usually for profit, you know, companies that can make money, but they're sitting in the traditional fiat world. And a lot of the tools out there that we could integrate with Bitcoin are probably not going to prioritize it either. So that's where, you know, I'd love to, you know, let's build some of this stuff and see, you know, how we can continue to increase that UX, where at the end of the day, we're putting the power back in the hands of the individual and the doctor, and away from this behemoth of a system that is leading to, you know, leading us to ruin, really.
So John, here's a little thought experiment. What does the US healthcare system, let's talk about that, because that's the one, at least, you know, the three of us on stage are most familiar with. What would the US healthcare system on a Bitcoin standard look like?
Yeah, I love this thought experiment. So I think first and foremost, it's decentralized, right? We have, instead of larger and larger health systems spanning across states and even across the country, like the Ascensions and Kaisers of the world, we have going back to more regional, localized doctors, and I think downsizing a lot of that infrastructure, even that was unnecessary, and really catering it more towards what we've seen, which is more outpatient, more selective, versus the huge overhead in fancy hospitals that, you know, we don't necessarily need. I think next, it's really open access. So a value of Bitcoin being, it's an open network. Anybody can tap into it and hop onto the network. You would be able to better access care. And that's really one of the issues too, even, you know, not only in the US where you have choice, but globally in other systems that like Canada or the UK that have government payers, it's really slow access. So if you have a knee replacement, you might be waiting a year to get your knee replaced. So people end up going out of pocket to private practices anyway, because the government payer is taking so long. So whether it's eliminating, you know, the government payer or the third party big insurance company payer, I think we have a similar impact of moving to a Bitcoin standard and eliminating these third parties and middlemen that are involved everywhere you look in all these different transactions, and enabling free market economics. Healthcare is the farthest thing from a free market in the US. That value for value connection, lowering your time preference as an individual to healthier behaviors in the long run. In thinking about lowering our own time preference, I think we've all experienced here, if you're in this room as a Bitcoiner, how Bitcoin can shift your own individual decision-making, taking on healthier habits, lowering unnecessary spending, and really prioritizing your time. in a different way. And I think for individuals in healthcare, you know, that can really deflate this bubble that we have of a fiat healthcare system, because if you start taking care of yourself and you make these lifestyle shifts that, you know, may be difficult to start, you know, changing your diet or in your lifestyle, and even tapping into your own body, right? And understanding, I don't know if any of you have read listened to Dr. Joe Dispenza about you are the placebo, and you know how to break out of old habits that are keeping you sick, even through yoga and meditation. And a lot of what I've studied in Eastern medicine and in Bali, you know, you have the power to heal yourself. And so you don't even necessarily need to rely on these Western medical interventions that people end up getting hooked on, and more of that sick care system. So if you tap in, exit out of toxic environment, relationships, whatever's keeping you sick, and you know, we have this prevalence of mental health challenges as well, and it's really deep rooted. And I think healthcare on a Bitcoin standard will align incentives, provide transparent pricing, and naturally lead us towards a world where we have these value for value, you know, connections with doctors, but ultimately becoming a healthy sovereign individual, and aligning with providers that are censorship resistant too, right? During COVID, there was ways that people were cut off from the banking system, depending on how they were practicing medicine. And rather than waiting for a nice to have, you know, or when a need to have moment to get Bitcoin, let's start now when maybe it feels like it's nice to have, but you have that redundant payment rail. So when the situation comes and you need to be able to continue to accept payments and you're cut off from the fiat rails, well, we can do that with Bitcoin and Lightning instantly and without permission. And I think that creates an ecosystem ultimately of people taking personal responsibility for their health and seeking out guidance from providers or friends or families or other nostriches that have maybe experienced a similar challenge in their own health, and they can learn from that and implement it in their life and reduce the reliance on this fiat healthcare system.
I love that, John. Certainly a world to look forward to. Now let's talk about how we transition to that world from the one we have right now. Unless the system burns to the ground overnight and is rebuilt from the ashes, right? There's no immediate way of doing it. So presumably we need some kind of sly roundabout way to get us there. And so my question is that transition to a Bitcoin standard really possible without some of these, without the Nostra standard happening first, right? Like, giving patients and doctors true ownership of their identity and their data so that the data can then be portable and interoperable, and maybe move to that more peer-to-peer care setting rather than this having this behemoth of an insurance company in the middle of, and all these other middlemen who are there, right? So this, I guess, yeah, to paraphrase the question, can we get to a Bitcoin standard without getting on a Nostra standard first?
I would agree and say no. We have to start, you know, really starting with that communication protocol is so important, and having Nostra and the ability for us to interact and change the paradigm of how healthcare data is stored and how we have these value for value connections with doctors. So doctors owning their own data, patients owning their own data, having these bilateral interactions that are really productive in nature rather than, you know, life sucking in the current system, and making it, you know, having Bitcoin payments naturally and Lightning, you know, built into interactions, whether it's between your doctor and your patient or the doctor and the pharmacy fulfilling orders, you know, of course, still, you know, depending on regulation in different areas, you know, there's going to be different considerations for each of these touch points across the healthcare system. But I would say getting the data out of the legacy Epics and Cerners of the world and onto Nostra, where you control your keys and you can selectively share that information about your health with whoever you'd like, it completely changes the game. And it's a massive, massive opportunity to, you know, to get started with these principles of building on open standards, having an open value protocol such as Bitcoin to pay for these valuable services. And then with Nostra, I think it's a match made in heaven for the communication layer and helping people take personal responsibility. And when you know, maybe I'll talk to my parents or someone else, they say, I don't really, you know, care about having my own data. But, you know, I think the younger generation, a lot of us, we do care, right? And a lot of people on Nostr who care about privacy, who care about freedom and censorship resistance, you know, we should care about really some of the most sensitive data for ourselves. So doing it in an encrypted, you know, HIPAA compliant way, we'll get the benefit too from a lot of, as Nostr continues to improve and grow and hopefully, you know, some less buggy here and there, but, you know, we can bring that to healthcare. I think it really lights me up and excited to, you know, have further conversations on that down the road.
Awesome. Yes. Couldn't agree more, John. So lastly, John, anything you want to plug?
I do have a masterclass on Bitcoin and healthcare, and really more of a discussion on this one next Thursday. So if you enjoyed this chat, August 29, 2 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. in the UK. I'm actually partnering with Dr. Alan Bryden, who's an optometrist in the UK, Northern Ireland, who's been accepting Bitcoin in his practice for several years, has his HODL eyewear line, and even a Sats for Sight initiative too. So we'll kind of dig deeper into these discussions. If you want to learn more and talk about Bitcoin and healthcare and what it looks like really from a medical practice, Bitcoin adoption level, tune in there, and you can go to satoshihealth.com to get all the details and sign up. So would love to stay in touch with all you Nostriches, the Bitcoin yogi. And if anyone ever wants to practice too, a little Himalayan Kriya yoga, tap into yourself, get out of your mind and into your body and dig deeper. Always happy to connect. So really appreciate you guys having me on PlebChain Radio. Love your show and keep up the great work.
And that will be in the show notes on this. If anybody listening and is on the road or something, just click in the show notes. It'll be there, the link. Looking forward to that. Well, I think that's it for today. If you're going to listen, always listen on value for value platforms or clients such as Fountain. We would love to hear from you. The new Nostr Nest or the new Nostr integration is next level on Fountain. So please download it, give it a try, get your InPub in there, and comment, boost. Love to talk to you. Let's bring the energy. Thank you very much. And until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Peace.